Sports Multiplication Collective podcast. This is a podcast designed to help you multiply like never before. I'm your host, Ed Love, and I oversee the Church Multiplication Collective, which is an intentional community of Wesleyan leaders committed to discovering, developing, and deploying workers for the Lord's harvest. I want to give a little special shout out to our good friends at Global Partners. They are sponsoring this lovely podcast and excited about how Global Partners helps churches engage in the global mission of the Wesleyan Church. And you can find out more about Global Partners at globalpartnersonline.org. Check it out. Today, we are going to be talking with Brian Bennett from Overflow Church in Benton Harbor, Michigan. I've been friends with Brian for many years, and I've always admired his ministry focus. And one of the unique dynamics of Brian's plant was that he began with a connection with a Christian Community Development Association. We're going to learn a little bit about that, what that looked like today, and what's that turned into. So, Brian, excited to talk to you today. Welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, man. It's good to be on here, and like you said, we've known each other a number of years, so this is an honor to chat with you a little bit.
You know it, and I'm just grateful for your ministry. Seriously, throughout the years, you've gone through a lot of things as a church planter, and all about seeing the kingdom of God enter the world. And it's not easy, but you've made it, and you've got a story to tell. So why don't you just give us a little of the backstory there of how Overflow developed and where you're at now?
Yeah, so in 2006 and 7, I was kind of minding my own business as a part of a large church and just enjoying that ministry and what God was doing. And God kind of interrupted me with Jeremiah 29:7. Which says, seek the shalom of the city and pray for it. And as you seek its peace and prosperity, so will you prosper. And so that whole idea just started really gripping me. And I started thinking about what would that look like in the city I was in. But through that process, God just really gave me this discontent, a holy discontent that led us to Benton Harbor St. Joe. And realizing I had been an inner city school teacher and a coach for a number of years, and really God used that time to really shape my heart around reconciliation and just working with the oppressed and being in an environment where bridges really need to be built. And so when we discovered, God led us to Benton Harbor St. Joe, and we looked at the demographics of two cities, Benton Harbor being around 90% African American, median income about 17 grand. And St. Joe being 90% Caucasian and about 60,000 median income and historically divided, we just knew that this is where God had called us to be, is to plant a multicultural church, you know, for all people. And then as you dive into that, you realize just gathering on Sunday isn't going to be enough. You know, the gospel, according to Matthew 25, affects all of life and, you know, what we do to the least of these and how we minister. And so that got us into Christian community development and really asking the question, if Jesus was here, how would he love this community? How would he go beyond the walls? And those were the kind of the early things in 2007 and 8 that kind of moved us. We were a parachute plant. I didn't know anybody here. So our first Bible study started with 6 people, and 2 were my wife and I. So, you know, very humble, small beginnings. And a lot of hard work, mm-hmm. and grinding it out with fundraising and just networking in the community. And we actually began with housing, with outreach to a housing project, and just learning to not just love a community, but be loved by them. You know, a lot of community development's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And it's a very humbling process, you know, especially when you come out of a big place. You suddenly are, you know, on the ground in a grassroots environment, and you're just learning to redefine your metrics according to more of what matters in the kingdom and more of what Jesus cares about. But boy, it's not easy, but it's fun. I will say, you know, I'm on the other side of 10 years, and God's been good. He is very faithful throughout it all.
Yeah. And that's important to note too. I mean, when you're talking about doing the type of ministry that you are in, it's going to take more time than you might think. And so it's kind of like, you're on the other side of 10 years and you're seeing, you've always seen fruit, but it's the credibility factor that's there. A lot of times in a community that may have gone through some hardships or has experienced some racial tensions. There's a lot of dynamics there that it takes time to work through, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. You know, that was one of the big adjustments was, you know, just realizing that I had to have a much longer view. I've told people that, you know, churches tend to think of 3 to 5 years, and in community development, you've got to be thinking 10 to 15 years. And, you know, early on, I mean, I had people, a number of stories and instances where I was meeting people in the community, literally had people tell me, you're a dime a dozen. You don't know how many people like you have come here to do this. Sure, you've heard from God, but this place will chew you up and spit you out in 2 years.
Mm.
Another guy looked at me and said, you're not needed, you're not wanted, you're wasting my time. And he was the leader of the biggest Christian nonprofit here.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was I'll tell you, I got to finish that story, though. When he did that, he also, in the same couple of sentences, just said something brilliant. And I pulled out a legal pad intuitively and just said, hey, could you repeat that? And I took notes. And that simple move, he went from saying that to me and saying, I've only got 10 minutes for you, to giving me 90 minutes, a full tour, and becoming a friend.
Mm.
Just that simple shift to being a learner
and
a posture of humility really made a difference. The guy that told me that this place would chew me up and spit me out in 2 years, I just said, he was my elder by a number of years, and I just simply said, well, thank you, sir. Would you mind? Could I have your business card? And at the 2 year mark, no joke, I called him, I took him out to lunch, I reminded him what he told me, and he laughed and said, well, how do you feel about the community now? And I said, well, I'm still here, and now I know people, so I love it even more. And he was in my office yesterday. He has become one of our biggest fans, advocates, and friends in the community now, 10 years later.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's neat. And that tells you something too. I mean, just this type of ministry that you're in, you know, you got to have the grit factor, right?
Yeah, grace and grit, man.
Grace and grit. There you go. I like that.
Yep. And a soft heart is what I tell people.
Yeah. And because you're going to come up against a lot of resistance. And and who are you? You know, a new mover. What's your agenda? You know, there's a lot of skepticism built in there, I'm sure. And you might get to more of that later. I'm really wanting to dig into this CCDA connection. That's for our listeners here. That's short. If you're not familiar with CCDA, it's short for Christian Community Development Association. And that is a tool that many church planners have used. Some have used it well, some have maybe not used it so well. And it creates a conversation, I think, that we need to have as a broader church movement. And we're talking about planting in urban areas and how to use it well, how to keep and maintain a kingdom theology around that, you know, because you could quickly move, you know, theologically across the spectrum into something that, you know, where you're just developing a nonprofit, hoping to do some good things. Yep. And that's not really, when you get to explaining this, I know you're going to explain it in a different way. And I want you to do that in your voice, because you've got a little different perspective that I think is unique, and we need to hear from that. But just give us a little bit of your spin on that. Okay, so you started with that type of an initiative. Tell us what that looked like, and how it was helpful for you. But then what I think we want to eventually get to is, tell us, how did you talk about that in a kingdom language? How did you wrap it? Because your real goal was to plant the church on the earth, right? You were to, you know, you're just helping people enter into the kingdom of God. What'd that look like? Go.
Oh man, there's a lot to fit into this story, so I'll try to do cliff notes. But you know, CCDA National is a great body of believers, and networking is a huge aspect of what happens there. And you just, if you're a planter that is looking at planting in the city, you got to look at them because they've been doing it for decades. The strength is the networking. To number one, realize you're not alone, that there's other people that are as crazy as you out there. And, you know, sometimes you need to know that the way you're thinking about your community and your city has that there's other people out there you can learn from, and it has a body of work that you can also, in our case, we went and visited. We went and visited sites where they had been doing this for longer than us to learn. Outside of networking, the other real strength of CCDA is their eight components, their philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And that philosophy, one of the things early on that impacted me was the idea of listening to the community. And so as we planted the church, my goal initially was, seeking the shalom of the city and doing this with a kingdom theology. And as we did this, and as we approached that, I began listening to the community and networking, looking for who was doing Christian community development in my city, because my goal was to partner with them. Now, after a year of doing that, I had met with many community leaders. And for those out there that, you know, were like, I don't have a network. Well, I'm a guy who was parachuted into my community. I didn't know anybody. I got one name. And as I met with that one person at the end of it, I tell people 90% of my time with them was listening. 10% was me sharing my heart. And then I would always close every meeting. The Lord had told me to kind of do these two things. Who else in our community, can you give me two other names of people I should meet with like you? And can I tell them you sent me? And that created this incredible network. So after a year of that, and I realized nobody was doing Christian community development here, we had launched the church in a movie theater. And I remember going to my wife and saying, I can't do this. And, you know, the look on her face, right? She's thinking, are you kidding me? We just moved a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old here. You're insane. And I said, you know, if we're not involved in Christian community development in our city, helping people find jobs and housing and making a real difference in their life in the name of Christ and his love, I don't know how we can do this. So we took 30 days. We prayed about it. And then what was so cool is as we felt led to do it, I went back to that network of people I had been meeting with and just said, hey, what if we do this together? What if no church owns it? And what if we created this kingdom vehicle of multiple churches partnering under a 501c3? And so I still today, 10 years later, serve as the president and founder. But what was unique for us was doing it right out of the gate with no church having sole ownership. We kind of gave it away. And so that's really now what has become Mosaic CCDA in our community. And that's another amazing story. But we have 200 to 250 graduates of our Jobs for Life program every year. We've grown in 7 years from $23,000 in revenue in 2010 to a projected $1.9 million this year in just 7 years.
What?
Yes, and that's running social enterprises. 70% of our funding, we run a store, we run a restaurant, we run a lawn care. And we do these things to be sustainable and to do job training. And it's just incredible what God has done with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, it really is. And so I was telling my wife the other night, you know, as a kingdom vehicle, our board has 18 board members from probably 13 different churches. Our management team is probably, well, I was telling her the other night, there's not a single manager that attends the same church.
Mm.
Really unique. Really, really unique. It's diverse. We have, you know, male, female, African-American, Asian. It's a mosaic. Truly a beautiful thing. Our church benefits from it in some great ways, but never financially. We've never taken a dime from our nonprofit in 10 years.
Yeah.
We give to it.
So, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So tell me about this. So such a unique way to start, you know, the church plan. Actually, you've had to learn to balance both of those worlds because you're still, you know, planter, pastor, Brian.
Yeah.
And you're leading a church, everything that that takes. And then you're leading the CCDA movement. And tell me a little bit about, you know, how you do that. How do you juggle both worlds? What keeps it together for you?
Well, I tell people when they see it, you know, it's the hand of God and a great team. I think there are things that I've learned that we've done the hard way. That I feel like, in fact, I spoke somewhere a couple of years ago about the fruit of failure, and it was a CCDA environment where I was just speaking about some of the things we've learned the hard way in the community.
Uh-huh.
So there's definitely a number of things to do differently. But I would say, you know, hand of God, a great team. God has fundamentally called me as more of an apostolic leader and as somebody who equips others. And so, you know, we today, believe it or not, between the two, we have well over 50 employees. And in doing that, you have to learn how to trust people. And a lot of what I do now is I work on vision and culture and hiring and strategy around building and working with those teams. And so, you know, I think that's been a big part of it. And that's to some degree a little bit different than what sometimes you'll see. We are still very grassroots. We do a lot of work in the parks and in the neighborhoods. We do asset-based community development. But in my community, I was standing in the middle of kind of a nonprofit desert. And God began through overflow, you know, bringing water and streams of refreshing, and the river started flowing. And in some ways, you know, it looks like we've rushed things, but really we were kind of riding a wave that God was creating. And so as a leader, I've had to learn to hire well, to trust, to train, to evaluate. I've burned out 3 or 4 times in 10 years. Where I've literally, I could tell you the stories where I've had to go get help, where literally I've gone to some counselors and therapists, and, you know, you just kind of, it's a part of it. For leaders, what I would say, Sabbath is critical. Like we actually really try to enforce that with our teams. We also give a day alone with God every once a month, in addition to vacation. And those have been really important for leaders in our environment that are grinding it out every day in an impoverished community. I mean, just Monday, yesterday, this is a Tuesday, we're recording this. On Monday morning between 9 and noon, we had no less than 20 people come into our church for financial assistance.
Hmm.
That was one morning. And
that
could be incredibly draining over and over and over. And so those rhythms of rest, of time with the Father, of solitude, of silence even, have been just as important as the ability to delegate and empower other leaders.
Yeah, yeah.
So I tell people we're super easy to get in with as far as welcoming people into the church or into Mosaic. But to get into our core team, we vet people. Our executive director that works for me now, he had 20 hours of interviews with no less than 15 people before we hired him.
Wow.
Yeah, we really do our homework.
Yeah, that's what you have to do. Tell me, how have you seen God work in the middle of all this, in between the new church plant and leading the ministries there and the CCDA? Like, I can kind of picture this as a shoe, and there's these laces going back and forth around the shoe, you know, and it's holding everything together. And if the laces were God's work, What would you say they were? Like, what does that look like when you see God work?
Yeah, I think that we're getting to see a movement, where everything has this Christ-centeredness to it. Everybody that's involved kind of understands and sees that. But we're seeing God build redemptive bridges to all people. That sometimes it's occurring through the church, sometimes it's occurring through Mosaic. We have a story actually that is a combination of Overflow and Mosaic, with a crooked cop and a gentleman that he locked up wrongly, Andrew Collins and Jamel McGee. Their story's gone national. They actually have a book coming out on a national publisher in September.
I know, I saw the video of that interview. Is it on YouTube somewhere? People can find it?
Yeah, they've been on Steve Harvey, CBS Evening News. Their book comes out in September, and it's on one of the biggest publishers in the country.
Yeah, what would you type in for the search key for that? Because people need to check that out. Convicted. What's it?
The book's called Convicted.
Okay.
Yep.
And then what about the video? If you were just to search for it, what would you type in?
If you CBS Evening News, Crooked Cop.
Crooked Cop. There you go, folks. Check it out. It's a great story. Great story. Yeah.
But there have been things like that, that it's a combination of the work in the church and then the work during the week through the CCDA stuff. So you have the reconciliation and the redemptive bridges. We're also seeing people that are forming new relationships in the region, whether it's by mentoring our Jobs for Life students or whether it's opening a door. You know, poverty, I heard it said that poverty is essentially a broken relationship with God, with community, and with environment, with work. And so oftentimes, people think, well, just pick yourself up by the bootstraps, and somebody standing there without any boots and no opportunity, and we often get jobs by who we know. And one of the cool ways that I think God has been using the movement here is the credibility and trust we've gained in the community has opened doors for people that if they're hungry, they can walk through that door. And they sense, the word we hear often is it's a new family. There's just this new family of people that are loving each other that used to stay on either side of the river, not interact. It's really, really cool. Can't always measure it by what we see on a Sunday morning. And that continually as a pastor challenges me, to get over how I feel about attendance on a Sunday and to look at the bigger picture. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And, you use this term shalom theology. I think that was the term you used. Describe that for me.
Yeah. Well, shalom, if you look at the word in Jeremiah 29:7, it's peace and prosperity. But if you really unpack it, it's this idea of wholeness, of being integrated. And it really takes us back to the garden. And it takes us back to this life we had before sin. And so if you look at the work of justice, that's incredibly important. Justice's end result is a restoration to shalom. And we get glimpses of it between the garden and between Jesus's return. And those are powerful when we see God doing that. Ultimately, Jesus is coming to restore us to this idea of shalom. And so when we do this kind of work in a city and in a community, we're as much celebrating, anything that's restoring people to wholeness, whether it's somebody who's able to forgive another, they're able to experience healing in mind or heart or soul, freedom from their old way of life, movement towards an abundant life. Mm-hmm. All of those things are just signs of shalom and God's kingdom coming. And, I this isn't what you asked, but you said I could go. So one of the things I've become more and more passionate about in the last couple of years, I think we've had a huge failure in the church over the last few decades of misunderstanding vocation and misunderstanding mission. And I think if we would really step back and help people to understand God's kingdom, his reign, his rule, and what it looks like to be peacemakers in our world, you know, we would be laying hands on lawyers and teachers and shopkeepers and, you know, grocery store baggers and anointing them on Sundays to go live as people of peace and on mission in our communities, rather than asking them only to serve at the church.
Right. And
yeah. So that's a big part of it, is almost inverting our normal model as pastors, as this, you know, we're using the language here at Overflow, gather, grow, and go. And so we want to gather, we want to grow during the week in discipleship, and then we want to live as people that go and live as the church. And you don't know, the interesting thing about Shalom is you don't know where it's going to appear. You know, that's the other thing I've learned through this work. God is at work. He was at work long before I came to my community.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people get in this idea of I'm bringing Jesus to the city or I'm bringing Jesus to the community. And it's like, no, man, he's already there. He's already at work. And we get to look as witnesses to see those signs of Shalom and peace. It gets a lot more exciting, but it takes a ton of faith. I mean, it's an adventure and you don't always have the answer. Like, there's no strategic plan for this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't sit in a room and say, here's what's going to, in fact, do I got a minute?
Yeah.
So a year ago, our nonprofit faced eviction. We had a landlord that was moving us out. And we had this sense of, okay, it's going to be all right. We'll work with them. We'll work with our community. A year later, we have moved from one building to three, from 9,000 square feet that we lease to 20,000 that we own. It's unbelievable what God has done. And a year ago, none of it was even possible. And it's just been like God reminding us, listen, you couldn't have planned this a year ago, because all three properties that we've purchased have never been on the market.
Hmm.
He's literally just brought them to us at the right time. And the provision, there was even a Monday back in November where we needed to close on one of the properties. We had 50 grand in the bank to close and we needed 200.
Wow.
We prayed on a Monday at 1:30, no joke. And by 5:30 that night, I got a text saying, as we laid it on the altar, $300,000 is on its way. I mean,
what? Yes.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
And I guess as I share that story, the role of prayer, fasting, and discernment is probably at the top of my list as a leader in what I've been part of for the last decade.
The role of
prayer, fasting, and discernment probably has meant more to what has happened here than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And oftentimes those are the things that are overlooked, you know?
Oh yeah. It's yeah.
Absolutely. We're looking for something else, maybe even a different type of leader, you know, where that is so good. Thanks for sharing some of the deeper parts of your story there that really gets into the theological side of it. So, I mean, and I think this is, it becomes clearer after talking to you. For you, in Overflow, Shalom is a much bigger kingdom concept.
Yeah.
And you can't quite say, although you would embrace CCDA and you're the president and it's a great thing and it needs to be there for, you know, in partnership with your church body right now. But it, that wasn't it, you know, the it factor was the Shalom and the way that you've been able to work through both of those to see a bigger picture and help people see how their influence in the community, just the ability to help someone find a job, to make room for people who maybe don't get room created for them. And that has brought a whole new level. And it's evident. And that's what God is up to, and he's blessing nonstop, you know. But to just say, okay, I want to start a CCDA because I like that. I want to start a nonprofit with a focus on this particular cause, you know, that's not it. It's so much bigger than that. And I'm thankful that you could bring that to us today, that you could bring that bigger picture, because that's so helpful, you know, and that's what needs to be taught, how to get that bigger picture. So,
yeah, well, I'm glad it's today. Through for sure. Yeah.
What would you leave us with? If you were to give a church planner going into an urban context, if you had just, you know, one final sending moment that you could give to them, before they head out on their journey, what would you say?
Think bigger and with a longer view, and know that you can only do that and sustain that by truly following Jesus daily. I think that's about it.
That's all you need. That's a good word.
So, and then, well, our story, I'll put a plug in, Go Now Be the Church is our story. It's actually in a 40-day devotional format. And if it's helpful, man, I'd love to have people check it out as a resource to just think differently about the local church. God's calling on my life, I really believe, is to reimagine the church in this generation. And that's what we're trying to hopefully live out here.
Yeah, that's the book's called Go Now Be the Church by Brian Bennett. And that was published by Wesley Publishing House. So you can find it there online, or anywhere good books are sold, right? Man, I am so thankful for you sharing here today. And thanks for being engaged in the Church Multiplication Collective. And we're just glad that you said yes 10 years ago to God's call on your life. And thanks for teaching us today. So signing off, brother.
All right. Thank you.
Go in shalom.
That's right. God bless, man. Thank you.